fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Give me a mountain with lots to do. Give me the sunshine. Give me a dew. Give me something simple and true. All I need is sunshine and a cool, refreshing mountain dew. So give me my good friends. Give me a dew.
Grab some friends and an ice cold Mountain Dew today.
Mountain Dew.
This is Jim, the battle of ideas.
I think this is the first time in 2026. Vanessa Beely, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
It is, yes, under very dire circumstances. Well, I don't know, dire for who, we'll get into that.
Well, firstly, how are you? Are you safe?
I personally safe where I am in Lebanon, yes, relatively, at the moment, because Hezbollah, the Lebanese resistance, has now entered the war, basically, after Israel and the United States assassinated the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Ali, yesterday. I'm completely losing track. We're not sleeping. It's like 24/7 coverage at the moment. And after they entered the war, of course, despite the fact that Hezbollah has maintained the ceasefire for 15 months while Israel has violated it, I think, more than 6,000 times now, carrying out targeted assassinations, bombing schools, civilians, firing on them from the border areas, encroaching on Lebanese territory, setting up military bases inside Lebanese territory, spraying agricultural lands with glyphosate, et cetera, for the last 15 months when Hezbollah decides to actually defend themselves and their people in the south of Lebanon and in the eastern areas on the border with Syria. That, of course, Israel has now launched a full campaign against Lebanon, and they'd already warned certain diplomats in Lebanon that if Hezbollah were to respond in the case of a regional war, they would be targeting a listed 1,200 structures here in Lebanon. So while at the moment it is, I say, relatively calm because they've been bombing the south intensively and Dahe, which is the southern suburb of Beirut. So there's been a mass exodus of people again from areas of southern Beirut into Beirut Central. And of course, many of them are having to be accepted into schools and hastily prepared refugee centres. So it's a repeat of what happened back in 2023, 2024, basically. But it's going to get a lot worse. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you came into my podcast and you had just...
I think so.
You had just run away. No. You had left Syria. You had basically fled Syria.
That was December 2024. Yeah. The ceasefire had come into effect in November 2024 between Lebanon and Israel. Yeah.
Well, now even if you wanted to, you can't flee because, as I understand it, Beirut's airport is shut down.
Has it actually shut down? I haven't checked it this morning. They bombed the airport road going from one of the southern suburb of Beirut to the airport. I'm not sure if they've actually yet targeted the airport, but it's high on their list of targets, yeah. To be honest, I don't have any intention. No, they will potentially target it if this continues to escalate, and I don't see any reason right now for it to de-escalate, then for sure the airport will be incapacitated and closed, I think.
Well,
that's their intention.
Yes, what I received earlier, Emirates is grounded temporarily, Etihad, Qatar, Doha, mm-hmm. Air Bahrain. India, yeah. Turkish Airlines, Oman, Syria, Lufthansa. There's a whole list here. But, I mean, the point there is that Uncle Sam, with his Zionist buddies, decide that they're going to attack Iran, thinking, well, what could possibly go wrong? Well, Iran's going to shut down half the world in response.
Yeah, I'm not entirely convinced that they didn't know that this would be the outcome, because I think you can't discount the number of kind of what I call end-time Jewish Zionists and Christian Zionists that believe that there is a necessity for an Armageddon in the world to bring the second coming of Christ into reality. And, you know, the Trump administration is packed full of those characters, as is the Knesset on both sides, not only part of the Netanyahu fascist government, but there are even more uber extreme factions within Israel that definitely believe in, you know, the destruction of Al-Quds, the building of the Temple Mount, and this whole idea of an Armageddon. And, you know, we've been heading towards this with all of the rhetoric from Israel, the destruction of the Amalek, of course, which is considered to be the destruction of all those that threaten the existence of Jews in the world today, whereas, of course, Zionism doesn't represent Judaism in its purest form. And so on. So I'm not entirely sure that they weren't prepared for the outcome. I think world populations are probably not prepared for the outcome, but I don't really think our current transnational ruling elite really gives a hoot about world populations or those that are not particularly useful to their agenda.
Let's just zoom out just for a moment. What is the official narrative? Why was Iran attacked officially?
Oh, for its new... well, hang on. I mean, this. Let's start in, where was it? 1951, when Iran was first declared to be a threshold nuclear state, right? I mean, this has been a... It's not a time for humor, but sometimes actually people who've experienced war situations know that humor plays a very large part in coping with what's going on. And I mean, it's been a running gag in this region that Iran has been on the threshold of nuclear weapons for around 30 plus years, right? And someone, I think, from Iran recently published a Maariv article that I think is as far back as either the 50s or the 30s. My mind isn't recalling it right now. Sleep deprivation. But so it's been ongoing for a very long time. And then, of course, the US in typical form was adding more demands to the negotiations. One, that then not only should Iran not even have uranium in Iran, even if it's being enriched for use for civilian use to provide electricity and energy and so on, which is necessary in a country under sanctions and under blockade. But that then they should basically end their defense program. Their missiles should be capped to, I think it was 300 kilometers. Uranium should be taken out of Iran.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. Into the United States. And actually, of course, the ridiculous thing, and all of this will get lost in the, you know, the turmoil that is now being generated by the US and Israel. The fact is that Iran had actually, to a degree, accepted a lot of these conditions. They had put forward a very realistic proposition for the negotiations. And then, of course, just as in the 12-day war, boom, the war starts. So there was never any intention. There's never any honest intention in negotiation with Israel or the United States or the UK or most of the EU. Remember the Minsk agreements, right? And this has been the ongoing scenario for decades now. Hamas, every time Hamas agreed to something, Israel added another clause to the negotiations, which was a known red line for Hamas. So Hamas didn't accept it. And then, boom, Israel bombs Hamas because they're so intractable, they're never going to accept Israel's conditions. Which, you know, no sane country, if the US right now had a Chinese fleet and Chinese military on its borders, it's not going to agree to reduce its missile program or its defense capability. Right? So why on earth would anyone in their right mind expect any sovereign nation in the world today to do the same when America has moved one third of its military, naval, air forces to within striking distance of Iran?
Okay, but then just to be fair, though, we know that the US and Israel don't have nuclear weapons.
That's another long-running gag. Well, we know that the US has already used nukes, and I don't think the US is particularly clandestine about its nuclear capability, to be fair. Israel is. It's not a member. It's not signed up to the non-proliferation treaty. It has never allowed the nuclear watchdog onto its territory to actually inspect its facilities. And it has the Samson option, which came into effect in 2005 under Begin, which says that if Israel faces an existential threat, which is right now, it reserves the right to use nuclear weapons. So, you know, as I keep saying to people, who do you really think is the nuclear state that is a threat to the world population right now? Do you think it's Iran? That has never effectively, until now. And by the way, it's not attacking countries outside of its borders. It's attacking American bases, American equipment, and American personnel on inside those countries. And so, as it said, it considers where it is attacking to be American soil, and it's only attacking military infrastructure, military bases, personnel, right? It's not attacking any civilian infrastructure or civilian hospitals, schools, etc. But Israel is. Israel always has. America always has. Human life is irrelevant to the United States and to Israel. But from an ideology perspective, Iran and the resistance axis do not target civilians. In war, it can happen. I'm not denying that it can happen. And the targeting now of Aramco in Saudi Arabia, of course, that's going to have an impact on civilian life in the West. But at the same time, who's created this environment?
Mm. There's such an interesting web here. And it's so difficult to wrap your head around it. I remember when I was in Dubai last year, you and I chatted and you were giving me a really, really good breakdown of how the Arab world, quote unquote, is so divided. That's by design, would you say?
It's by design for a long time. If you go back to the creation of Israel and why it was created, it was basically to drive a wedge between Egypt and Syria, because at the time, of course, they were leading the pan-Arabist campaign in the Middle East to secure independence, Middle East, West Asia, to secure independence for these countries and access to their own resources, including in Saudi Arabia. So guess what? You know, despite there being multiple options, according to Theodor Herzl, for the creation of the State of Israel in other countries, whether it was Cyprus or Argentina, et cetera, or even, I think, Ethiopia, It was settled by the British and the Rothschilds that they would end up where they are, occupying Palestinian territory, because, of course, that is pivotal to their role as interference and military surveillance outpost for the British and the entire imperialist cabal in the Middle East. And if you look at the Clean Break Doctrine from 1997, the intention from Israel and the CIA, who basically wrote the document, the strategy document, is to balkanize the Middle East into what they perceive to be sectarian controllable statelets that will more willingly accept the supremacy of Israel in the region. And of course, that was the intention for Yemen also, by the way. And now for Iran, that's what they want to do, is carve up the entire region into effectively warring statelets, some supported by the state, some supported by France, some supported by Russia, some supported by Israel, doesn't matter. But in order to allow the expansion of Israel and the Zionist movement into the region.
And that's why we see Iran launching missiles into otherwise Islamic countries. And people are going, why would they do this? And that's because of what you just said.
Yeah, it's not only because of that. If you go back to the history of the creation of Saudi Arabia, for example, it was effectively engineered by the British and Lawrence of Arabia, because there were areas in Saudi Arabia, particularly in the West, Hejaz, that refused to basically abandon support for Palestine, and so therefore they rejected the creation of the State of Israel, and they rejected British foreign policy in this region. And as a result, the British empowered and supported Abdulaziz to enable the spread of Wahhabism throughout Saudi Arabia and to put it under the House of Saud, which is effectively the creator of one of the most fanatical branches of Islam, which is Wahhabism, which has then, of course, been used to create organizations like ISIS, like Al-Qaeda. So that's the origin of what's going on. And that's why I remember when I said to you when you were in Dubai, I said, I don't consider it an Arab nation. I consider it a genetically modified outpost of Israel. And that's what it was designed as. UAE. All of these countries.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Trees, basically.
I remember I was sitting in my hotel room and we were having this conversation and I opened up my computer to have a look at a map because it's something that the average person doesn't quite grasp.
Yeah.
You think, they're all the same. It's just all the same thing. And it really, really isn't. There is this huge division that has, shall we say, Zionist influence or infiltration. The UAE, for example, is in the pocket of Israel.
Yeah.
While I was there, I asked somebody, can you fly a Palestinian flag in Dubai? And he said, no, you can't.
No. No, I mean, UAE is probably the most aggressive of the Israeli agents in the region. I mean, the genocide that they're basically enabling and facilitating in Sudan is on behalf of Israel. Somaliland, on behalf of Israel, so Israel can establish naval bases on the coastline of the Horn of Africa, of course, facing Yemen and the Red Sea, right? UAE, just to give you and not really an anecdote, but a little bit of side history to this. I'm trying to remember the name of the company. I think it's called Dark Matter. And it's basically an AI surveillance company in the UAE, which employs Israeli Unit 8200, so the Mossad type spy unit, the military spy unit, to work at its organization. Now, as part of that employment package, they're buying them very expensive homes in Cyprus. So effectively, what does that mean? They're expanding Israeli settlement as a proxy. right? They're working on behalf of Israel to expand Israeli presence, not only in this region, but globally. And you know, you're absolutely right. These countries are a very separate entity to the region generally. No one here kind of considers them, apart from the fact that, of course, Saudi Arabia basically appropriated some of the most holy Islamic sites. Yeah.
Just to be clear, you're talking about the Gulf states.
Yes. Yeah. The Zionist Gulf states, as I call them. You know, so, and look at how Saudi Arabia manages the most holy sites of Islam, right? Mecca. And where was that? Wasn't there a cloth from the holy shrine or a part of the cloth that was sold to Epstein? So that's how much they value it. And, you know, they are sectarian in who they allow to come in and even pray during Hajj at Mecca and so on. So it's a complete, I don't see them as Arab states. I just see them as an extension of Israel and Washington and the UK in the region, how? Basically.
How did that happen?
British. because you know, the British and the Rothschilds created Israel, right? And at the same time, they understood that they needed protection and apologism for Israel in the region. And so they engineered that through, as I said, the dominance of Wahhabism in Saudi Arabia. And then, I mean, if you go back even in more recent history, it was Tony Blair that was creating the relationships between UAE and Israel. He was setting up the meetings, but actually so was Epstein, now that the documents have been... I mean, I haven't gone massively into the Epstein documents for many reasons. One, I'm super busy here, but also for me... It appears to be like a campaign to get rid of the old guard in government and to bring in the new technocratic ruling class. So a degree, you know, I'm not very surprised by what Epstein got up to or the people that were involved in it or weren't involved in it. Do you know what I mean? So in a way, yeah. It's just vindication and confirmation. But it's interesting, some of the elements that are coming out in relation to, as you said, the relationship between UAE, Qatar, although Qatar is closer probably to Turkey because of the Muslim Brotherhood connections, but UAE, Saudi Arabia, and are definitely the two main players, even though, and the UAE was one of the first to sign the Abraham Accords with Israel, it was also, even during the genocide, building... The land bridge and the railway joining the Gulf states with Israel to avoid the blockade in the Red Sea, and as part of the India-Middle East economic corridor, which, of course, Gaza is intended to be a link in that corridor, which is why it's important for them to either ethnically cleanse all Palestinians out of Gaza or to create labor camps where they can be further incarcerated in mini concentration camps that will be used for cheap labor or free labor while they steal Palestinian gas off the coast of Gaza and off the coast of the occupied territories.
Now, all of this creates the context for what... You posted something on Substack, which I found fascinating, called The Great Blinding. And that actually illustrates why Iran has attacked, quote unquote, various neighbors. All it was doing was going after U.S. military installations for surveillance and spying and that kind of thing.
Yeah. And actually, it was interesting because I was having a discussion. This wasn't my post, by the way, but the infograph that they produced made a lot of sense. And I had already been saying, I'd had a discussion with someone who said, you know, why aren't they bombing Israel straight away and all this? I said, no, look, this makes total sense because they can't fly. Iran at that point couldn't fly their planes, for example, to bomb American infrastructure and bases in neighboring countries. Because of the radar system, some of the most expensive and some of the most sophisticated in the world that the US has put on these bases in the various Zionist Gulf states, right? And so it made perfect sense for me that what are they going to do? They're going to effectively blind the enemy. If they can destroy all of these early warning radar, I don't know all the military technical terms for them, but basically the equipment that enables the US to detect both missiles, drones, and planes. And actually what's been indicative of it is that I think yesterday they actually launched MiG-29s that had been supplied by Russia fairly recently on bombing raids into Iraqi Kurdistan and into the Gulf state US bases. So that for me was a demonstration, because they would not have been able to do that prior to that blinding exercise, which is still ongoing. Although now I have noticed they're targeting energy and electricity stations. So I think now they're basically saying, okay, now we're going to give you a taste of what it's like living under this kind of pressure of no electricity, no water, no ability to basically provide for your people. Again, they're still not killing civilians directly, but what they're saying is you've had Iran and this entire region pretty much under sanctions for decades, and you've incapacitated many of our abilities to be able to take care of our people, although they still are. And that's another point that I made. You know, when you look at what Iran is doing to actually help its people in a war environment, they're providing free transport, free metro, foreign students that are in the country. They're bypassing the bureaucracy, giving them immediate release permits to enable them to cross to land cross borders, right, into their own countries for safety. They're providing food in the shops. They're doing everything they can. Let's have a look at the US-Israeli record of taking care of their people. Israelis won't let non-Jews into the shelters, by the way. Ethiopian workers or Filipino workers that want to enter the shelters are being turned away. In America, let's look at Hurricane Katrina, Hurricane Sandy, the response of their federal emergency management agency to black people or to other ethnic minorities in America. Even in Syria, when America absolutely devastated Raqqa in Syria, killing multiple civilians in the process, supposedly driving ISIS out. They left all the mines. They left everything. They didn't clear anything. You would never see the Syrian government and army do that. If they liberated an area, it was immediately cleaned of all IEDs and mines to reduce the threat to civilians. No, you don't see America doing that. You don't see Israel doing that. Even for their own populations, that's my point.
But Vanessa, we know that Donald Trump wants to turn Gaza into a casino. This is going to make life better for everybody.
Oh, yeah. He's going to turn it into, what is it, Jared Kushner's waterfront estate, I think. That's basically it, isn't it?
I mean, what is the end game here? What is it that the United States of Israel wants?
Well, the United States of Epstein, or Rothschild, really, it should be. 12,000 mentions of the Rothschilds in the Epstein papers, so I guess that's a bit of a giveaway. Look, I think ultimately what we are witnessing on two levels, let's look at the religious level first, right? I'm looking at my figures now because it's huge. There are 200 to 260 million Shia Muslim in the world today, distributed from Iran, Pakistan, India, Iraq, Turkey, Yemen, Azerbaijan, Afghanistan, Syria, KSA, Lebanon, Nigeria, Kuwait, Bahrain, Tanzania, etc. You get the idea. Even in Germany, Oman, Qatar, Bulgaria, UK, and some in South Africa. Although in the UK and South Africa, it's quite difficult because they don't differentiate between Sunni and Shia, It's generally recorded just as Muslim population. And you have the Western Israel backing what I call the GCC bloc or the GCC Zionist bloc, which is the Gulf State bloc, which is not only Sunni Muslim, but extremist Sunni Muslim. As I've mentioned, in Saudi Arabia, the Wahhabi doctrine. And then in Syria, of course, you've now had the West and Israel impose an al-Qaeda extremist government under Ahmed al-Sharaa, or al-Jolani as he should be known, the release or the deliberate release of ISIS in northeast Syria that had already been manipulated and weaponized by the United States in particular, but also the holding camps were funded by the UK, and there are reports that MI6 was busy radicalizing the children in those camps. So you've got another, I think, around 20,000 fighters released in the northeast of Syria. And so right now you're entering into what can be compared to the historical battle of Karbala, which was between the followers of Imam Hussein, effectively the Shia and other denominations within Shia Muslim faith, and the Sunni extremists. Not the moderate Sunnis, not the Syrian Sunnis, who also don't want to be ruled by al-Qaeda. And Christians, of course, in the region, many of whom support the resistance. And so we're heading to an interfaith war, which is being deliberately engineered as such. From an economic political perspective, if you want to call it that, they want to see the end of the resistance. And for them, it is advantageous to have the area governed by Sunni Islam as they see the business class. If you look at the CIA documents relating to Syria, you'll understand that they wanted to replace President Assad with what they deem to be the Sunni business class, because they're easier to work with. Right. In other words, they're easier to debt enslave. That's what it basically comes down to. So then the region is more controllable. While they still have resistance factions that are dominated by Shia Islam, but are not consisting only of Shia Islam, then that means that for them, the region is secure. And if you look at what they did to Syria immediately after the fall of Damascus, Israel bombed all of their military installations. They don't want any threat on the borders of Israel now or in the future.
You know, Vanessa, whenever we have a conversation surrounding Iran or Israel or Zionism, we always have to bring in the religious aspect, because it's fundamental. It's foundational. It's what drives a lot of this. It's this weird merger of geopolitics and beliefs. And yeah. I was just wondering, what do you think would happen if the evangelical Christianity of the United States were to stop seeing Israel as this holy land, as the chosen land? What do you think would happen?
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It would probably end, to be honest. Support for Israel would probably end, because I think...
But would Israel end?
The Christian Zionists outnumber Jewish Zionists, I think, by 10 to 1. I think I'm correct on that.
Yeah, and that's why it's important to point that out, because it's not necessarily Jews. It's also a particular branch of Christianity.
Yes. Yeah, and it's a particular branch of Jews, although I think there are now documented statistics that say that probably 80 to 90% of world Jews support Zionism, either from an extremist perspective or from a kind of moderate perspective, where they don't really want all this bloodshed, but they still see Israel as the homeland. Sorry, I've slightly forgotten the question.
Okay, no, I was just asking, okay, all right, let me make it simpler. If there were no more Christian Zionists, would there still be Israel?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think so. Yeah, because Israel is a component in the entire Zionist movement, which is rapidly dragging the world towards Pax Judaica. Instead of, you know, it was Pax Americana, then it was really Pax Judeo-Americana, now it's Pax Judaica. The host is, in my opinion, the parasite is eating the host. You know, let's have a look at Latin America. Why has Trump reappropriated much of Latin America? Cuba is probably, you know, the last bastion of Chavista resistance. And of course, it's being put under energy deprivation and blockade. Venezuela, okay, we can say the Chavista government is still in place, but it's, you know, what can it do? How can it react to a supremacist country that's literally in its backyard without the support of, say, Russia and China? Yeah, it can't do anything. It has to just hope that it can retain some kind of sovereignty and some kind of socialist ethos to its governance. Long term, I don't know how they're going to achieve that, but we'll see. But if you look at why did Maduro get taken out like that? When was it? The beginning of January this year. It wasn't, I mean, forget about the narco state nonsense, right? Everybody knows that the CIA are running the majority of the cartels and so on. But actually, the biggest threat to Israel is the perceived influence of Iran and Hezbollah and the resistance factions in Venezuela. So who was this done for? Was it done for America and to stop drug cartels, or was it done because Israel demanded it? Because almost immediately or concurrently, Milei in Argentina, who's a fascist Zionist supporter, launched the Isaac Accords in Latin America. And I think to now there's about 5 countries that have joined that. So just as you had the Abraham Accords in this region, you've now got the Isaac Accords, which is effectively an expansion again of Israel. And then the original territory that Theodore Herzl was looking to appropriate for Israel on the borders of Chile and Argentina and Patagonia, we've now seen wildfires in that area, believed to have been started by some of the Israeli settlers there. And now you see the Argentinian government saying, we'll free up land sale after the fires. So what does that mean? That means the Israelis can come in and buy up the territory that they already wanted in the first place. Look at Cyprus. Israel is effectively stealth occupying Cyprus with the help of the British and now the Greek Cypriots. And it's threatening Turkey. Turkey's also going to come under attack at some point in some way, by the way. Because Turkey represents, although it has been an ally of Israel to a large degree, it still represents a military presence that can be a threat to Israel in the future. And Erdogan, in particular, with his neo-Ottoman ambitions, is to some degree going to try and block Israeli expansion. So they, in my opinion, will definitely be in the crosshairs at some point, particularly if Iran doesn't win this war.
Vanessa, who's calling the shots here?
The Zionists, not Israel. The problem is when people reduce it down to just Israel, right? Which is effectively, it's a military outpost in the region. I think Robert F. Kennedy Jr. described it best when he said, look, it's a bulwark for the United States in the region. It's providing us with surveillance. It's providing us with interference, which means regime change in the region, and so on. But it's a component, a very important component. It's kind of the representative component of the Zionist movement. But the Zionist movement itself is expanding far beyond Israel. It's expanding into US government, into world government, but particularly in the UK, the EU, the US, Africa. Christian Zionism is taking a hold in Africa. I mean, enormously so. Right. China, yeah, even.
Exactly.
The Chabad Lubavitch has existence in China. In Russia, Chabad Lubavitch has a massive influence. Look at Russia's relationship with Israel. Right. And the fact is that I think there was a recent interview with a Russian academic who said, look, the early Zionist settlers were Russian. Because the Zionist movement began in what is now Ukraine, but formerly was Russia.
Almost every single South African major political party has Zionist funding.
Yeah. I think people, even for me, sometimes the extent to which they have, and to some degree, you have to admire them for their ability to do this. It's quite extraordinary. Considering what they're doing in Israel, considering the genocide that has been ongoing for 100 years, but if you look at it from October the 7th, it's just been live streamed. It hasn't stopped since the Trump peace scam. And yet it's managing to extend its influence, its tentacles globally.
If we go back,
Iran is probably the only country actually that hasn't. Iran and the resistance axis members and Venezuela, Cuba, some of the African countries like Burkina Faso, the independent countries in the Sahel now. But apart from those, it's embedded in almost every country.
JFK was somewhat ambivalent, I beg your pardon, to Zionism. I think he kind of didn't really want much
junior?
Of it in the...
Well,
the president.
Oh, sorry, yes.
Yeah, he wasn't quite keen on Israel and the CIA, and of course he was assassinated. And I'm just wondering, every single president after him has been a Zionist, mm-hmm. I think with Trump being probably the most hardcore Zionist of them all.
Uber Zionist, yeah. Yeah. And people told me I was crazy when I was saying, even before he was officially elected, I was saying he was going to get in and that the genocide was going to increase and that we were heading for a regional, if not a global war. And people were just saying, meh, you know, he's going to end all wars. He's going to be the president of peace. He's going to make America great again. I was like, yeah, okay, all right, whatever. And guess what?
So now for some of the counter responses you've no doubt seen, I'm getting them all the time. Yes, but Iranians don't want the current regime. You know, this is a good thing. They need to be dismantled.
Where are you seeing the celebrations of those that are against the regime? Where are you seeing them live stream from? In Iran? Or
on
in
social
New York?
Media, Vanessa. Obviously
or in London?
X.
Or in France? Or in Germany? It's exactly like Syria. Where was the greatest support for regime change? From the bought and paid for diaspora, right? And it's exactly what you're saying now. I saw a statement from Pahlavi, the so-called alternative to the current governmental structure in Iran, who was mourning the death of three American soldiers. Look at the, which will never be shown on the BBC or anywhere else, but look at the millions that came out in the streets of Iran after the assassination of Imam Ali, which is not the government, by the way. I'm not an expert on Iranian constitutional structure. You can probably ask one of your other guests that hopefully you're going to speak to soon. But the government itself, by the way, is a reformist government, and they were the ones pushing for negotiation. And they were democratically elected in Iran, far more democratically than any election in the United States or the UK, by the way. Right? The IRGC and the spiritual leadership is kind of course it's connected to the government, but it's kind of a separate entity to a large degree. And I've spent considerable time in Iran, both in 2016, I think, and then in 2022. I was there for about 2 weeks and I was traveling from different cities to speak to people and to hear what they have to say within student unions, within the bazaars. And the protest began from the bazaars, from the bazaaris, the people that run these bazaars in all the cities of Iran, because they are feeling isolated. They were talking to me about it in 2022. They are feeling isolated. They are feeling squeezed economically. Of course they are, because the West is ensuring that that is the situation in Iran. But the early marches and kind of protests at the beginning of January were peaceful. And actually the security forces were marching with them, because the security forces in almost any country are some of the lowest paid members of society. So they were walking with them, saying, yeah, like, you know, we also are suffering, etc. And then what happened is that you have the CIA, Mossad, MI6 engineered riots take place. And this is not something I'm making up. Netanyahu, Lindsey Graham, Mossad itself have made it quite clear that they are infiltrating and enabling these protesters. There was a documentary recently released where Mossad is training the Kurdish separatist factions, both in Iran and outside Iran, to turn against the regime. And that's a documentary produced by Mossad, so I'm not making this up. But if you look at the millions that came out in all cities of Iran, right, even after the riots, they came out in celebration of 47 years of the Islamic Republic, so 47 years since the Islamic Revolution. Every city in Iran was packed. Look at the people who came out on the streets after the assassination of Imam Ali and tell me that there isn't support for the government and the military. No people in their right mind are not going to unite behind their leadership when their country is being bombed. I mean, it's common sense. People united behind Churchill. He lost support after the war. But when the war was happening, they united behind him. And that's exactly what's going to happen in Iran. Even those who potentially opposed the current government, although it is a reformist government, or opposed the current spiritual leadership in Iran, they're going to unite behind, because they're Iranian people. The people that are saying, yay, great, you know, death to Imam Ali, death to the Islamic Republic, are the ones outside that are living in America. They're living safe. But they're calling for sanctions. They're calling for the bombing of their own country. This happened in Syria. It happened in Yemen. And these people are actually more disgusting to me than Israel or the United States, because this is their own people that they're calling for the death of, that support the current government in Iran and the current leadership in Iran. They're calling for their death. And the death of, what was it, 165 children, girls, in a girls' school, in the Minab girls' school bombing. They're calling for that. That's okay for them. It's disgusting. They should be stripped of their Iranian citizen, if it were down to me.
Is Iran losing?
No. No. Look at the damage. And bear in mind, it's up against two nuclear states. And now you have Britain, France, and Germany, I think. I mean, I love it. Keir Starmer is an idiot. How can someone come out and say they're going to respond defensively to support a war of aggression? I mean, it's the dumbest statement ever. And if people actually think Britain has a ship that's going to make it that far without sinking, they're delusional. And the same for France and the same for Germany. And I don't mean sinking from missiles, sinking. I mean, the British can't launch a ship without it sinking before it gets beyond the British coast, for God's sake. This is like, you know what I mean? Their military and their naval capacity has not been maintained. There's been defense cutbacks in Britain and in the EU for years. What are they going to do?
Yeah, Let me ask the question differently. Is Iran...
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
On its own.
Yeah, that's a more pertinent question, I think. It's on its own from a military perspective. What do I mean by that? Iran is fighting this war alone, apart from the allies that it has in the region, which are Yemen, the resistance in Iraq. There are still 100,000 former Syrian Arab Army soldiers in Iraq and Lebanon that I'm sure will take part in the war as it escalates. The Lebanese resistance, Hezbollah, the Palestinian resistance. I'm sure that Burkina Faso and other independent countries in Africa have been providing some support. In fact, I kind of know they have, whether it's training or whatever. They can't provide equipment, but they can provide training and support. A lot is being made of China and Russia's contribution to the military capability of Iran. And I have done multiple interviews. People can go and look at them on YouTube. And I recommend following a young Iranian analyst, Ehsan Safanajad, who has been not really, it's not a question of debunking. But the problem is that people are not giving credit to Iran for its missile program development, even under sanctions since the Iraq-Iran war. In the 1980s, it has done incredible things in its own development and progress in this field, right? Has it been, to a degree, helped by China and Russia? Yes, but not to the degree that people are trying to sell it as, honestly. There are no S-400s in Iran. There are no S-300s in Iran. They've supplied the MiG-29. But when you compare what Russia has supplied to Algeria, for example, it's 10 times more than what they've given to Iran. And there's a very good reason for that. Russia is effectively aligned with Israel. That's why it's happy to share technology with India, but not Iran. It hasn't shared any actual technology with Iran, right? And the reason it's in bed with Algeria is because Algeria represents an outpost, a military outpost for them, bordering the Sahel and bordering all of their interests in Africa. So there's a clear reason for that. Plus, Algeria is independent. It's anti-imperialist. So there isn't going to be interference from France or any of the other colonialist nations in Africa. But Iran, it's an issue. They kind of need Iran for the North-South trade corridor. They're interested in exploration of gas reserves and so on. So it's a pragmatic relationship with Iran, but it's not an ideological relationship. Their ideological relationship lies more, actually, in my opinion, with the United States and Israel. For China, it's sheer pragmatism. They've supplied some radar, but again, yeah, but not to the degree that people on social media, not China, but people on social media are trying to kind of, blow it up to some kind of incredible, you know, China is basically going to save Iran. No, it isn't. Iran is going to save Iran. China may contribute something to that military campaign, but they're not going to intervene. And no one's actually asking them to. That's the whole point, because I keep getting lambasted by people saying, you know, why should Russia? And I'm not saying that. But what about boycotting Israel? What about stopping trade with the Zionist bloc, which includes UAE, Saudi Arabia, Israel, right? What about that? They couldn't even bring themselves to do that during the genocide. How does that support international humanitarian law? It doesn't. So all I'm ever saying is stop expecting anything from Russia or China. If they help, if they sell weapons, they're not giving weapons to Iran, they're selling them or they're doing a trade, they're getting cheap oil in return for whatever technology they do supply, not technology, but equipment they supply. That's fine. That's pragmatism. That's trade. But ideologically, they're not going to come to the defense of Iran.
You know what's interesting, Vanessa? Maybe I'm not seeing it correctly, but in the 1960s, for example, the youth in the Western world would protest war. I mean, this was a big thing, particularly in the US, right? Today, the youth protest gender identity. I wonder what's happened.
Oh, gosh. I think that's a conversation on its own. I guess the last big protests that we saw in the UK were against the Iraq war, and that achieved nothing, you know?
And how long ago was that?
2003, the second Gulf War,
so over 20 years ago.
Preordained, illegal, yeah. But I never really saw any protests against the war in Syria. I never saw any protests really against the war in Yemen. Certainly not of the size you're talking about, right? Are they being completely enslaved by the media narratives? Yes, to a degree. When I see, despite Libya, Iraq, Yemen, Syria, Lebanon, Egypt, now it's happening with Iran, and we see the same old stuff come up again. You know, the regurgitating of media narratives of, oh, but, you know, freedom for women, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, how's freedom for women looking like in Afghanistan right now under the Taliban? Cool. You know, we did a good job there, right? How's freedom for women looking like in Syria right now? How many women are being abducted as you know, slave brides for ISIS? Yeah, great job. And now you want to bring the same freedom to Iran after Israel and US actually bombed 160, killed 165 girls, children. I mean, if they're not raping them through Epstein, they're killing them, right? But we're supposed to believe in their version of democracy. I mean, I have to ask myself, how much more sadism and Satanism do you have to see the governments in the West project? How many more children in Israel are going to get raped in the prisons, in the schools, in the religious structures before you start understanding that this is a society which is basically seeped in pedophilia? Pedophiles that are going to be prosecuted in the United States go to Israel because it's a safe haven. They can convert to Judaism and be welcomed into the pedophile society that is in Israel right now. And if you don't believe me, go and read Hebrew media, because they're reporting on it. And if they're reporting on it, it's probably the tip of the iceberg. Epstein was a Jewish was an Israeli agent. So, you know, I have to ask myself, how much more do you have to see of the absolute rot of your own governments, the depravity of your own governments, before you stop looking somewhere else and wanting them to interfere in another country? Turn against your own governments. Do something useful.
Is the Middle East falling?
West Asia? I'm desperately trying to kind of get people out of the Middle East thing, which is a British concept anyway.
Okay, no, that's good. That's good. Quickly take me through that.
Well, because if you think about it, the West is the hegemon, right? It's the dominating force. And so it was them that labeled, what is it? It's the Middle East. It's to the east of the West. But no, in reality, it's West Asia. It's west of Asia. That's the point. It's to do away with all of these colonial terms that we've kind of, even myself, we've absorbed over the years without thinking about it. But in the same time, we're basically reinforcing colonialism by using those terms. Because the Middle East means it's not independent of the West. West Asia means it's independent of the West and it's pivoting east, right?
Okay, so then my question is West Asia falling?
I hope it doesn't. I can't answer that question because right now it's at war and it's going to be the final war. I don't see any stopping right now. There's two reasons why I hope it doesn't. One, because that will mean the entire region will live under Zionist occupation, and living under Zionist occupation is not a life, it's survival. That's the first reason. And that's the anxiety of people here, by the way. It's not the war itself, because that at least is a period of activity. It's a period of being able to do something about what is happening. What they're afraid of and anxious about is what comes after if they lose this war. You're talking ethnic cleansing. You're talking massacres, slaughter. You're talking occupation, oppression, the whole technocratic surveillance machine brought to bear on this region, just as it's now being introduced into Gaza. And I've said for years, the Gaza model is what is going to be rolled out globally. And so that brings me to my second point. If West Asia falls and if Iran falls, the world is lost. That's my opinion, because this is the front line between the expansion of that technocratic, transnational, ruling predator class led by the Zionist movement and the rest of the world populations. Because as soon as this is finished and they consider it a done deal and they can start introducing all of this AI surveillance here to basically isolate and imprison and enslave the peoples here, it's not going to stop here.
So Iran is on the vanguard of Western Asia.
Yeah.
Also, just to be clear, Iran is not Arab.
No, Persian.
Mm. This is something people Persian. Always forget.
I know. They all get kind of lumped in together, but no, it isn't. It's Persian. And also the other point to make, of course, is the Arab countries that are allied with Iran, they are allies. They are not proxies. They act independently of Iran. Just as any ally would support another ally, Iran has been incredibly supportive to both resistance or free nations in this region and resistance non-state actors, like in Iraq, for example. But they are not proxies. That's also another misleading narrative, and that's being very kind in Western media.
If Iran were to ask for help, who would come?
All the countries that I mentioned, for sure, all of the resistance, the entire resistance axis, that's it. As I said, I'm not expecting Russia or China to step in at any point. They're not going to. You know, the rhetoric about Cuba, as far as I know, the Russian vessel that was supposed to be bringing oil to Cuba, so in other words, it was going to challenge the U.S. naval blockade, has turned around. It's detoured. It's gone. They're very good at rhetoric, but actual action, the follow-through doesn't happen. So, no. There may be an increase in depending on how important they see Iran to their economic trade future, there may be an element of supporting Iran. But I would ask the question, what if Trump says to them, well, okay, like we'll put in a regime and we'll give you XYZ oil and we'll do this. I don't know. They'll do what's best for Russia and what's best for China. And I shouldn't, you know, I personally don't expect them to do more than that. My beef is always with people that are kind of idealizing their involvement in the world today and the involvement of BRICS, which is
also non-existent.
As far as I'm going, yeah. Well, it's non-existent as an alternative to the imperialist axis. Yeah, look at
BRICS
India.
BRICS is largely just before nonsense.
And I mean, you know, Modi literally genuflecting at the feet of Netanyahu, what, days before the war began. So, no.
All right, Vanessa, on that very uplifting note, how can I follow your work?
People can follow me on Substack, Telegram, X, all as Vanessa Bealey. I don't have any brand name or anything. And YouTube. And I'm severely censored and throttled back, as we all are. So, yeah, please do follow me. X will probably remove you if you are following me, but at least, you know, try.
Okay, Vanessa Beattie, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Thanks.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.